Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad in Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing?
I'm all right, baby doll. How's it going?
I was worried then when the opening wonderful soundtrack kicked in. It looked like you were going to say something and kick off the podcast, steal my all
steal
powerful opening line that I love so much.
I'm like a rat taking over your 7-Eleven, aren't I?
Speaking of, actually, it doesn't make sense. But Pete was just telling me about a rather crazy story that beggars belief. Of a Japanese guy in 1999 tried to hijack a jumbo jet and fly under the Rainbow Bridge.
That was his plan.
In Tokyo. Life goals. It's insane. I've never heard of this story until you were just telling me about it. Give us the lowdown, Pete.
There's a guy. His name's... Yuji Nishizawa. He hijacked an airplane in 1999, and he was gained access to the cockpit.
So he went to the cockpit.
Went to the cockpit, stabbed the captain, took control of the plane briefly, but then they managed to the staff and the air stewards managed to take the knife off him and get him out of the cockpit, basically, and he was arrested. Sadly, the pilot did pass away.
How did they land the plane? Well, co-pilot was still
co-pilot was fine, so he put it on the ground, but it just really... it was completely normal, kind of like crappy, horrible, harrowing story, until they said that his plan was to fly under the Rainbow Bridge. Now, the Rainbow Bridge is not a big bridge, but I'm like, you've piqued my interest there, sir, if you don't mind me saying.
You'd probably fly under it.
You reckon? It's just a small little bridge over a little onto the island, isn't it?
Well, I drove over it a few weeks ago, and I did think...
I could probably fit a plane under it.
I don't know, it's quite high up. There's a lot of space under this bridge. I didn't think, yes, one day I'll try and hijack a plane and fly it under the bridge, but...
What an inauspicious start to a podcast, talking about a man trying to fly a plane under a little bridge.
A little bridge?
A little bridge.
Well, steady on now. No one slags off the Rainbow Bridge on my watch. At night, beautiful though.
It is. I like that part of... it reminds me of going to Japan for the first time, just having a stroll around, go to... Odaiba's got like a load of... it's got a big wheel, hasn't it?
It does, So if you're in Tokyo, ladies and gentlemen, you go to the Tokyo Bay Area, or Odaiba, which is this kind of artificial island they built off the coast of Tokyo in the 1980s. Mm. The idea was to create this futuristic city, and then the economy went in the gutter, nobody had any money, and it was kind of left barren for the next 10 years, and then finally money came back.
Get a little bike and ride around. It's beautiful.
It's beautiful, and from Odaiba, the view of the Tokyo skyline, it's one of the best in the city. I actually put it up there, like one of my top three views in Tokyo. And the Rainbow Bridge, it's true to its name. They light it up and it looks like a lovely rainbow, and the Tokyo Tower kind of lingering over it in the distance looks amazing.
Did it come from Super Mario? Or did Super Mario
it
do
did
it
yeah for, no, right, okay. No, I don't know, of course it didn't come from Super Mario. Probably
well,
did
I don't know.
Probably did,
not
to be
Japan.
Honest it did, yeah. That'd be cool.
I'm obsessed currently with the Twitter page Mondo Mascots, which basically chronicle the weird and wonderful world of Japanese mascots.
Right
there, I mean, I know like every prefecture, every business, every government initiative has a character.
Well, we talked about Kumon a few weeks back.
Yes.
Kumon, the billion-dollar mascot who generates hundreds of millions of dollars for Kumamoto region in Kyushu.
Huge.
They love him.
Huge.
Because they gave licensing... They let anyone license Kumon, no matter how, like, for anything. and so his face is everywhere on every item across the country.
There are some doozies on this Twitter page, basically going through all the more obscure mascots. Takapor. Do you want to meet Takapor?
I've never heard of this.
Takapor is the mascot of Takamatsu Airport in Japan, right. And he is a sentient runway. It's just a big runway with arms, with planes for arms.
Try and describe that on a podcast. It's like a domino. Imagine a domino.
Yeah.
As in like a
It looks like the bottom of, an ironing, an iron.
A domino iron. With two arms sticking out of it. Brilliant. My favourite is still Melon Bear.
Melon Bear, yeah, he's
in,
pretty...
In Hokkaido, I've featured a few times. It's basically a bear with a melon for a face, and it's absolutely terrifying. It's so scary. I watched a video of Melon Bear turning up to like an elementary school in Japan, and all the kids just bursting into tears and being absolutely terrified, as you would be by a massive giant melon bear.
Can I interest you in Haunted Tokei Guy?
Tokei guy,
yeah. He's a man with a possessed clock tower for a head. And he's, oh my. And he just walks around with a.
Is this a real mascot?
These are all real mascots, right. It seems.
This is a video I need to make.
You do need to just meet as many as you possibly can.
I'm definitely doing this.
This is. But you have to go to Ebetsu. I don't know where Ebetsu City is.
What?
Any ideas?
Ebetsu.
Ebichun is the mascot of Ebetsu City, Japan. He's constantly moved to tears by the deliciousness of the local wheat he's holding.
The local wheat?
Wheat. So right. It's a chicken that is holding a piece of wheat, an ear of corn, a piece of wheat, and he cries constantly. And he can't fly because his head is a brick. You having a bit of that?
Oh, my crikey. That? What's that called? Chicken head?
Ebetsu guy. Ebichon or something.
Ebichon. Ebetsu City. I don't even know where that is. That's one of these obscure little cities.
I want to meet our mascot, Chris. I want to give it a big hug and make it
a chicken
okay.
with a square head and tears coming out of his eyes. That's memorable. Is that an official... Are these official mascots?
Apparently.
These,
like, I mean, you wouldn't make a suit otherwise, would you? You wouldn't make a block-headed
there are lots
bird
of,
that can't fly.
There are lots of unofficial mascots. I made a video once. Japan's biggest morning market in Aomori, which is a lovely morning market on a dock with 500 stalls. Mm. And there's like this unofficial squid mascot. Right. And he just comes around. It's just this like elderly man who has nothing better to do. He just puts on a squid costume.
Nice.
And just walks around. And I got like a photo with him. Oh, it was great.
Wonderful.
Squid
what,
guy.
There is a Pokemon. There is a Pikachu costume in the... dressy up shop, the fancy dress shop around the corner from where we're recording this podcast. And I think you've got to inflate it to make it look like him. But this one's never inflated. It's just hanging outside the shop and it always looks so depressing. I really want to start like a photo blog of people in Pikachu, bright yellow Pikachu costumes that have got a bit grubby. Because they're always just filthy, these things. They're disgusting. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to just take pictures of dirty Pikachu costumes.
Some people want to fly bridges.
Yeah.
Some people want to fly...
fly sentient bridges.
Some people want to fly airplanes under bridges.
Yeah.
Pete Donaldson wants to do whatever that was.
Mine's safer.
Dirty costumes. No. Brilliant.
Speaking of transport.
We turn our attention to transport. Today we've got two stories coming up about the Japanese Olympics next year. Mm. Obviously it's a big deal. If you're in Japan, you'll find that every single minute of every day, you'll hear the word Tokyo Olympics and... it's just a bit annoying. Mm. But they are a bit worried about the Olympics because it's going to be in August. And for those of you that have been to Japan in August, have you been to Japan in August?
Yes.
Do you remember hot it was?
I remember the pictures that I took there where I had big patches of sweat under my arms. It was disgusting.
It's so damn hot, Pete. The reason I'm back in the UK for summer this year was I just thought, I'm not doing it. I can't do this again. And it's really quite horrible. It's stupidly humid. It's 40 degrees. And this week, there's actually been a lot of people, I think 5,000 people have gone to hospital this week with heat stroke and 11 have died just because of the heat being absolutely bonkers. Mm. So they're worried about the Olympics for two reasons. One, the heat, and one, the transport. Let's start with the transport. They're worried that worried that Tokyo's efficient rail system won't be able to handle the Olympic strain. Already... trains in Tokyo, train cars run at 200% capacity.
Right.
Apparently giving passengers just enough space to read a magazine. And that's kind of... that represents a normal commuting weekday in Tokyo. Yeah. And if you've been on a train in Tokyo at commuting time, it's really quite horrible. But At 250% capacity, you can't even move a hand.
Mm.
And after 1964, after the last Olympics, that's when they hired these people called Oshia, known as pushers.
Mm.
And you've probably seen them online. These are kind of people that come along with a stick to literally push commuters and pack them into rush hour cars. They're often sort of standing there wearing white gloves. They probably need to keep clean. And they're there to push locals onto the trains.
Yeah.
It's one of these ways. Famous images of Tokyo, isn't it? You know, people getting stuffed into a train. I've actually never seen it myself. I've seen it, but not experienced it, actually.
I could do with one of those in central London, yeah, because people just don't know how to deal with themselves.
I think if you were getting on a train in London, someone's pushing you on, physically pushing you with all their might to get onto the train, they would probably just turn around and punch you in the face. but in Tokyo, it's an accepted thing to be pushed on the train by a guy wearing
like
white gloves.
Like bloody cattle. But at least the trains run on time, that's all I'm saying.
But they predict, with the Olympics, the trains could hit 400% of their capacity. Meaning not only are you not going to be able to move, but there's a real risk. There's a real risk, they worry, that someone could just get killed, could be crushed, similar to a stampede, or could just fall out of the train, or something could go wrong. So they're actually encouraging employees and companies to work from home during the Olympics, which is actually not a long time. The Olympics starts on July 24th, 2020, and closes on August 9th, 2020. That's, what, just about 2 weeks, right? I think in other countries, if they're going to have that kind of... If there was that risk of problems arising, transport-wise, they would sort of just say, don't come to work for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's the Olympics. How long is
the Olympics? Is it like two...
It's 2 weeks from... From July 24th to August 9th.
But the problem, with Japanese companies, they're quite set in their ways, aren't they?
They're definitely not going to... Yeah, they're definitely not going to happen.
But I guess... But they might take this on board. The government might have the ears of these companies, and this might actually change working conditions for a lot of people.
Well, that'd be quite interesting. I mean, 2,000 companies have agreed to participate.
Mm.
So this could be, you know, this could be the dawning of the next evolution of change in Japan. People actually working from home.
Yeah.
Because work from home is not really accepted in Japan at the moment. It's not really a thing.
No.
So that could be interesting. It could actually lead to change. The Olympics in 1964 changed Tokyo immeasurably. Mm. They invested billions in infrastructure and changed the face of the city. So this Olympics, might actually just change the work culture. So that could be an interesting outcome, I think.
Yeah, and I think anything that improves workers' situations can only be a good thing.
Absolutely. But if the traffic and the transport aren't worrying people, then the heat certainly is. And as I said before, you know, 5,000 people hospitalised last week, 11 died. I don't know what they could do there. Any ideas?
Get some
umbrellas out.
Those little hand fans that were very popular like 2 years ago in the Far East, and then they just disappeared. You know those little plastic hand fans you get in the cheap shops? And
I haven't seen one of those in years. I used to love those. They were my favourite thing.
I had like Hello Kitty on them and stuff. It was just like,
I used to put my finger against it and see if how much it would hurt getting it chopped by the
fan. You mean like the kind of like the ones, old school ones?
I'm talking
like ones that are like about that big,
right?
And they're encased, so you can't get your fingers through it. And
I used to love getting those little fans and then threatening people with it. It's just
plastic. It doesn't hurt anyone.
but there's not a lot they can really do here.
Yeah,
other than just. I don't know. I don't know what they can do.
Well, the Earth is only going to get hotter, isn't it? But it's the same problem with the World Cup, obviously, in Qatar in a little while. They're going to have to move it to winter time, and it's still going to be very, very hot indeed.
Well, one thing they've tried to do is plant trees on routes leading to tournament venues to provide shade.
Yeah.
That's quite an interesting move.
It is.
Planting trees to create shade. Tokyo does have an absence of trees compared to, say, London, where there's quite a lot. The foliage and greenery is in short supply in Tokyo.
Well, the cities don't provide any kind of cover, and trees are an excellent source of... They're nature's air condition, as people say.
Yeah. Well, Tokyo's new Olympic Stadium, which is nearing completion, will feature fans and things, and they do think it's going to be 10 degrees Celsius, 18 degrees Fahrenheit cooler inside the stadium than outside, thanks to the fans and everything, but I don't know, seems quite optimistic to me.
They were having a race in Tokyo, or somewhere in Japan, I think. I watched it on there, I saw it on the telly, and I was like, why are you doing it now? Why are you doing it in August in Japan, having a run around? Good Lord.
Like, what, me?
Having a race in the middle of Tokyo.
Well, I did that video a few weeks back, didn't I, running around central Tokyo, and I don't know what the heck I was doing there. It was kind of cool. I've never run around central Tokyo. I quite liked it, but at the same time, I did nearly die of heat stroke.
I'd get my head caught in someone's bike spokes almost immediately.
Brilliant. But they're doing all sorts of weird things. They're using robots and artificial intelligence to play a role in combating, like, facial recognition scanners. They're kind of using artificial intelligence to speed up security screening, so people don't have to wait outside as much in the heat. People can get through, moved. So there's all these weird kind of indirect practices and ideas and procedures that might stop situations arising in which people might get overheated or pass out.
Oh, what? So they're just getting that kind of quicker. Yeah, and I guess, like, nowadays, you're not going to have the same security concerns as you do in a, say, European destination or somewhere else, that, like, for security, like, you know, bombs and stuff like that. You're not going to see quite so much stuff like that.
Absolutely not. But they've also got a real-time weather map app. So, like, you can get an app that tells you to not get outside if it's too hot.
You shouldn't need to be told that, to be honest. You shouldn't. Hey, yeah.
Just a message comes up saying, don't go outside.
I just think,
don't do it.
Just great advice from the Odd Brawn Japan podcast. Have an ice cream. No particular brand.
I know what you
just
would
have
do.
An ice cream.
Free Koolish for every
free Koolish
every
for
spectator.
Everyone. Sponsored by Koolish. Just hand out the Koolish.
Brilliant.
Get them out.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Three. Six.
We now turn our attention to the fax machine.
Hello, fax machine. How are you?
What have we got? Hi, Chris and Pete. Been watching the channel and listening to the podcast for a while now. Binged everything. And while listening to the two podcasts on the go that I've heard you complain about the heat. My question is, what's the best place to visit when Japan... Sorry, what's the best place to visit when visiting Japan in summer? A place where you don't have to run for a convenience store. I should probably check that I
run to a convenience store.
Why am I reading? Am I reading this wrong?
No,
what's going on?
My question is, what is the best place to visit when visiting Japan in summer? A place where you don't have to run for a convenience store for air conditioning. So I think they've confused us by using the word convenient store instead of convenience store.
There you go.
So you're reading it right. It's just confusing.
Well, Jonathan, who wrote this, also adds, also while we're at it, all hail Chris.
Oh.
Even though he can't read my letter. Sorry, Pete, it's Chris's time to shine. Greetings, Jonathan from Belgium. Thank you, Jonathan.
I didn't realise that was...
It's Chris's time to shine, not yours. Even though you did finish off the reading of the facts.
Oh, I helped out. I was helping out.
Well done, Pete.
It's a team effort, mate.
It's a team effort. We can all shine here. the best place to visit when it's summer, Hokkaido, done.
Yeah.
Or Tohoku.
Gone off.
Where I live in Sendai, it's known as the coolest prefecture in Japan, Miyagi Prefecture.
Is it?
It's not cool because it's just cool. Well, it might be cool because Ryotaro's there.
Oh, right, yeah.
And he's inherently cool. He's cool. The James Bond of Japan, Ryotaro. The temperature's a lot lower there, which is nice. But Hokkaido, I recommend in summer. I think you're going to find it's just right, just perfect.
Just bearable.
I've never been in summer. That's a lie. I have been in summer. I went with Natsuki, didn't I? It was great. I actually really loved it. I really like Hokkaido in summer. I highly recommend it. Hokkaido and Tohoku are really nice.
I think the air seems a lot cleaner.
The hair seems cleaner.
It's very enjoyable.
Definitely avoid the south, though. Kansai, Kyoto, Osaka, Fukuoka in summer.
Get out the cities, though. Just get out the cities, man.
Yeah.
Go and have a swim.
Absolutely.
Go and have a swim. Got an email from Cody from Denver, Colorado. Hello, Cody. Hi, Pete and Chris. Sorry for the long email. I've been a long-time fan of the YouTube channel after binge-watching it to plan my first trip to Japan in August of 2017. Now I've been listening to the podcast for 8 hours a day at work. How have they managed to do that? While planning my third trip back for the third year in a row. It's addictive, isn't it, Cody? It is addictive. The first trip, my friends and I went to Tokyo, Kyoto, Osaka and Hiroshima in the summer. The second trip, we went to Tokyo, Sapporo, Hakodate in winter. Poor planning on both accounts, I know. Now I am planning for my third trip to Japan, this time for the cherry blossom season. I'm going with a group of people who've never been to Japan, so we'll be going back to the more iconic locations that I went on my first trip. Since I know that Chris has probably dealt with this many times, I was wondering how you typically deal with revisiting the same places again. I love visiting temples, so I'll have no issues visiting them again, but I would also love to see some new things if you have any recommendations that are a little bit off the beaten path. I was also hoping to get some recommendations for you. Things to do during the cherry blossom season, since it's something I haven't seen you talk about a lot. Hey, look at that tree. There's some bloody stuff in it. That is the cherry blossom season, in a sentence.
It's an interesting question, and one that I thought about it a little bit, because I do have friends and family come over regularly every year, and I have to do the same damn route. Oh, it's Tokyo, oh, it's Kyoto, oh, it's Osaka, it's Hiroshima, it's
like,
time to go home
Village.
Now. And Fox Village, yeah. Actually, I haven't been to Fox Village in a while. You've been to Fox Village, you loved it.
Should have seen see how they are.
I'll drop up there.
See how those foxes are.
I've been thinking one way you could do it is to try and base your trip in Japan around experiences rather than places.
Right.
Like, you know, try and eat all these different foods, try and meet someone at a karaoke bar, try and do karaoke, you know, rather than thinking about places. Usually when you think of your holiday in Japan, you do think, oh, I need to go to Tokyo and Osaka. And maybe you can go there. But try and think about what it is you want to do in Japan, the experiences, like go to a love hotel. If I was going to make a holiday now to Japan, I'd make a list of like 25 experiences, like go to a love hotel, go to a maid cafe, go and get the best view of Tokyo, go and meet three Japanese strangers, go to a karaoke bar, sing with a businessman and a salaryman, go to a izakaya and try this. I'd base it around those sort of experiences, food, people. I think that would make the holiday more memorable, potentially.
Rather than Instagram
focusing
nonsense.
On the places.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what's your two cents on that?
Yeah, just try and avoid the usual Instagram-y sort of stuff. You know, I never understand why people sort of take pictures of, like, I don't know, the Empire State Building or the Statue of Liberty, because it's like, People have told you taking pictures of that. Just well, steal one off the internet.
We're in that culture where people want to show that they're there, aren't they?
Just take. Photoshop. Do what you want. Just avoid all the tourist traps and just steal the images you want from somewhere else. Photoshop yourself in. Put yourself
you
in.
You haven't
the
really been on holiday recently, Pete. You've just been photoshopping. But no, I would honestly try and do that. Try and make a list of things you'd love to do in Japan and then turn that list into reality.
Yeah.
Don't base it around places, base it around experiences.
Faces. Don't place it around faces. Places. Base it around faces.
Not a bad idea. I find the holidays are always much more memorable and exciting and brilliant when you've got people involved, strangers or people you've met along the way, fellow travellers you've shared the experience with. I remember one of my favourite times in Kyoto, the first time I went to Kyoto actually, I stayed at a hostel with my friend George, and we went for a drink on the rooftop bar at the hostel, and there was five or six other people, we chatted to them, and then we all went to karaoke, and it was one of my first times at karaoke, and I loved it. It was really fun.
Nice.
Just sitting there, singing with people I'd probably never see again and didn't see again. But it's just fun, you know, showing that experience. So base it around faces, not places. There you go.
Have you stolen my line?
I've stolen your line.
Outrageous.
Got one from Harry O'Neill who says, "Hi, Pete and Chris." That's where your excitement ends, Pete, because this question's for Chris. Oh. I love this. Pete's being alienated in two questions so far. Who knows? Maybe you can be a part of this one this time, Pete. Did you ever feel awkward or self-conscious filming yourself in public? If so, how did you deal with it and become more confident? Love the podcast and congratulations on the cycle. Thanks, Harry O'Neill. You know, for the longest time doing videos in public, I felt like I just couldn't do it. I hated it. I remember doing a video out the front of Sendai Station about how expensive is travelling Japan or something like that. And right. I decided to film it out the front of Sendai Station, the opening. And I only had like five or six lines and 30 seconds of footage, but it took like half an hour.
Yeah.
Because I'd get halfway through a line and then someone would stare at me and put me off or laugh or stand there and watch. Mm. And I couldn't do it. And to this day, I still don't enjoy it that much. But through journey across Japan, through cycling and travelling across Japan and making a vlog every single day for like a month, by virtue of the fact I had no choice, I got quite good at it. To the point that I was just walking down the street with a camera in hand on like a little tripod, filming myself talking really loudly out the front of a station. I didn't care. I just felt like I created this wall between myself and my camera. And there was almost like an invisible bubble, a barrier around me. So now I don't care. I'm quite good at it. I don't feel anything. It took me like 7 years to get to that point. I feel dead inside.
It's just practice, isn't it? Yeah. Whenever I film anything outside in like festival situations and stuff, that's people just always being very bothersome, just kind of coming over. As soon as you've got a cameraman with you filming you, they automatically think it's going to go end up on the news. Yeah, I think it's on the TV. But I think filming yourself, as long as you've got a nice camera. And it's not just an iPhone or whatever.
Right.
It's kind of... I think that gives you a bit more of a veneer of authenticity.
Absolutely.
If you've got a nice camera rather than just a smartphone, because you could just be just any old dude.
Well, what I'll say is in Japan as well, people are very nice about it. They won't get in your way or be annoying or shout, "Oh, yeah, dickhead," while you're filming. Don't think that's happened yet.
That's very much
I've had some like Japanese schoolboys be like, and do weird noises and things brilliant. Like that. But generally, people are all right. It just takes a bit of practice. You have to just flick off this kind of switch in your head to stop
just
caring.
Get it done.
Sounds easier than it is, but I seem to have got good at it after 7 years. But interesting question. Keep the questions and stories coming into abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com, guys. We'll be back same time next week to do it all over again. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have yourself a great week, and we'll be back next Wednesday, 10 p.m. British time.
Bye-bye.
See, I remembered it now.
Place, not face.
I know times.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.